What could be? Everyone's already here. Jude yanked the front door open and glared angrily at the bitch. She whispered, "Don't you own a watch?" The bitch came back at her.
"Yeah, but I had three dudes come by in a van and they were loaded with cash. Shit, you only gave me 200. Don't go tripping on me or I'll turn right back around."
Jude decided to swallow the words in her throat. At the moment, other things were more important. Meredith decided to come out of the dining room to investigate. She was shocked when she saw the slut standing in her doorway. The woman gave the impression of being a streetwalker. She had on a taut spandex skirt that was so undersized you could see the crotch of her red lace underwear, a pair of stilettos, and a halter top in the middle of November. "Who the hell are you?" Meredith demanded to know. Jude winked at the bitch, letting her know it was time to get the show on the road.
I'm looking for Henry," she said. "Henry Pierce? Does he live here?"
Meredith came closer to the door. "Henry's my husband. Who are you?" The bitch grimaced and then laughed in Meredith's face.
"I'm Henry's mistress."
"Mama," Jude cried out, starting the performance she'd planned all along. "Daddy has a mistress?" Meredith coughed, trying to prevent herself from choking on her own saliva. "Of course he doesn't. This woman is obviously mistaken." She eyed the hooker and said, "You've apparently got the wrong house." The bitch asked,
"Is this 12709 Spring Valley Lane?"
"Yes, it is," Jude quickly responded. When she noticed no one else was coming out of the dining room, she got louder so they could hear the commotion.
"You did say you were looking for Henry Pierce, didn't you?" she yelled.
Henry obviously heard that because he appeared around the corner less than 10 seconds later, asking, "Who's at the door?" The bitch eyed Jude, trying to make sure he was the right person because she'd never seen him. Jude decided to confirm it by running up to Henry and throwing her arms around his neck.
"Daddy, say it isn't so. Say she's lying."
"Who's lying?" Henry asked. Meredith glowered at Henry and said, "Your mistress is at the door."
"My what?"
Henry bellowed. It gradually became Noah's Ark up in the Pierce household as their guests came into the living room in pairs. No one wanted to be considered nosy, but at the same time, no one wanted to miss a single word of what was about to go down. The bitch came farther into the house uninvited and threw herself down at Henry's feet, grabbing onto his calves.
"Henry, please come be with me."
"What? What the fuck are you talking about?" Henry was panic-stricken. "I don't know you." The bitch got up and placed her hands on her hips in anger.
"Oh, so you're just gonna play me like that, huh?"
She turned to Meredith.
"My name's Mahogany, and I'm carrying your husband's child."
Meredith threw her hands up in the air in alarm and looked at Henry. "Damn, Henry, she's pregnant too?" Meredith was totally embarrassed. She couldn't believe all this was happening in front of her family members. She switched her attention to Mahogany. "It's Thanksgiving. Couldn't you have had the decency to at least wait until tomorrow? We have guests."
Mahogany said, "I don't give a damn about your guest. Your husband paid me for sex at first. Then it became much more than that. I started being with him for free, and we fell in love. Why should I have to spend my holidays alone? I belong here just as much as you do, even more probably because I'm the one satisfying his needs."
Henry seized Mahogany and started pushing her toward the door. "I don't know what kind of game you're running, but you need to get the hell out of this house right now." Meredith's sister Elaine, Miss Know-It-All, was the first family member to jump into the mix.
"Henry, how could you do this to Meredith? She's been faithful to you all these years and treated you like gold, you filthy bastard."
Mahogany pulled away from Henry and spit in his face.
"That's right, you filthy bastard."
Meredith couldn't take any more. She broke out in tears and ran upstairs. Both of her sisters followed her. The rest of the family stood around in silence, regarding Henry with expressions that ran the breadth from anger to pure repugnance. Jude really laid it on thick by burying her head in a pillow from the sofa and sobbing. She was in actuality laughing and grinning from ear to ear, but they all thought she was overcome with emotion. One of her uncles came over and started patting her on the back. "It's gonna be okay, Jonquinette." Henry finally broke out of the state of shock he'd gone into when Meredith took off up the stairs. He became physical and dragged Mahogany out the door onto the porch. He told her, "Don't ever come around here again or I'm calling the police. You're obviously some hopeless whore who thinks she can achieve something from doing this. Well, you're not getting a damn thing except locked up if you don't leave." Henry came back in and slammed the door in her face. Everyone could hear her outside screaming, "You bastard! I should call the police on you. You're gonna take care of me and this baby, or I'm taking you to court. You hear me, Henry? Do you hear me, you bastard?" Jude got up from the couch, wiping fake tears, and announced, "I'm going to lie down." No one paid much attention to her as she eased upstairs. They were all too busy preparing to rip Henry a new asshole for mistreating the precious Meredith. 10 p.m. Junquenette woke up and wondered why it was so quiet in the house. She noticed that it was dark outside and couldn't believe it when she saw that it was 10 o'clock on her digital alarm clock. She couldn't have possibly slept through the entire Thanksgiving. She got up and went into the bathroom to wash her face. When she glimpsed in the mirror, she couldn't remember putting on the outfit she was wearing. There was a sheer layer of lip gloss on her lips. She didn't recall putting that on either. As she went down the hall toward the steps, she paused to look into her parents' bedroom. There were clothes strewn everywhere and evidence of a struggle. Junquenetta grew scared. Had something bad happened? Had there been an intruder or something? Junquenetta tiptoed downstairs and was relieved when she saw her Aunt Elaine and Aunt Louise sitting on the couch with her mother between them. "Mama," she called out, "what's going on? Where's everyone else?" Her mother didn't answer. Instead, she broke out in tears. Elaine hopped up and came over to Junquenette. "Don't worry, it's going to be fine. You and your mother still have each other." At that point, Junquenette's knees went weak. "Where's my daddy?" she asked. Elaine cradled Junquenette's face in her hands. "He's gone." "Gone?" Junquenette started crying again. "He died?" "No, child. In light of what happened earlier today, your mother thought it best that he leave. He took some things with him, and who knows, maybe one day they can reconcile." Meredith yelled out in anger, "Don't lie to her. There's not going to be any damn reconciliation. He cheated on me with a hooker. A hooker! I hope he burns in hell." Louise patted Meredith on the back. "If there's any justice in this world, he will burn in hell for all eternity." Junquenette didn't know what to say, so she didn't say one single word. Chapter 19. Junquenette. I heard the knock at my door and debated. I wanted to go out with Mason so bad, but in all fairness, how could I allow him to become involved with a basket case like me? He knocked again, and I realized he wasn't going away. It was 7 o'clock on the dot, and we had a date. I couldn't believe I was going on an actual date, my first for all intents and purposes. I smoothed out the cream dress I had selected to wear one last time, hoping it wasn't too wrinkled. Then I opened the door. "Hey, Mason." "Hey, Junquenette." He was standing there looking as attractive as ever. "You all set to go?" he asked. I was too caught up in his hazel eyes to come up with an answer at first. Then I realized I couldn't go through with it. "Actually, could you step inside for a moment? I really need to talk about something important with you."
No, Mason said, shaking his head so his dreadlocks swung from side to side. "Don't do this to me again, Junquenette. Don't cancel out on our date.
Could you please just come in?"
Grudgingly, he came inside but stood right inside the door and didn't venture any farther.
"Mason, there are a lot of things you don't know about me."
He grinned as if to say, "Is that all?"
"I'm sure. There are tons of things we don't know about each other," he said. "That's the whole rationale behind dating, getting to know each other better."
"You don't understand." I diverted my eyes from him. "I have some issues that I need to work through before I can get caught up with someone."
"Okay, I'll bite."
He crossed his arms in front of him and sighed. "What kind of issues?" I turned my back on him and went to sit down on the couch. "This is extremely complicated for me." After closing my front door, Coming into the living room and sitting down beside me, Mason said, "Take your time." How could I put it without making myself sound insane? Let's just say that I have a lot of emotional baggage that I'm hauling around with me. "Don't we all?" Mason asked. He reached for me gently and rubbed my shoulder. "Junquenette, I don't profess to be some sort of saint. I've had troubled relationships in my past. I'm not about to give up finding Miss Wright, though. Life is short, and I intend to share mine with someone." "So you're looking for a serious relationship?" I asked, because I knew that if I entered any type of relationship at that point in my life, it would have to be a committed one. Dating numerous men was definitely out of the question. Besides, Mason was the only man I had ever been willing to take that risk for anyway. "Eventually," he responded. He slid his hand all the way down my arm and took my hand. "I won't lie to you or attempt to deceive you. No one ever knows where something might lead, but I'm at the point in my life where I could see myself settling down with my soulmate." He leaned over and kissed me on the corner of my mouth. "I'm only being so persistent with you because I have a feeling that you might be her." "Then again, I might not be her," I stated half-hearted. If I was crazy, then I certainly wasn't the one for him or anyone else. "There's only one way to find out," he said, and stood up, pulling me up with him. "So are we going to dinner or not?" I strained my mouth into a smile. "Sure, why not?" Mason gave me a strong hug. "Exactly. Why not?" Less than 30 minutes later, we were being seated at a nice, cozy table at the Sky Club. "This is a nice restaurant," I commented. Mason opened up his menu. "I'm glad you like it." "Do you come here often?" I asked. "No, this is my first time here. One of my buddies told me about the place at work. He said it had a remarkable atmosphere and appetizing food." The place definitely had charm, and the aroma throughout the restaurant was mouth-watering. Well, he was right on both counts. There was a band playing that was so incredible. "The music is wonderful also," I added. "Tell me more about yourself, Junquenette." "I'm an accountant for an office supply company, and that's about it. I generally go to work and come home." "What do you do for a living?" "I'm a quality control manager for a biomedical company." "That sounds major. Are you a brainiac?" "Not hardly. My parents kind of forced me into the profession. They thought it would pay well and get me out of their house before I turned 40. We both laughed. "It's true that a lot of college graduates are having problems making it solo," I said. "Well, you seem to be holding your own." "I don't really have a choice. My father is no longer in my life, and my mother is not the type of person to live with. She would drive me plumb foolish. So I definitely have to make it by myself." I was hoping Mason didn't ask me for more details about my parents. "What other things do you enjoy doing?" he asked. I shrugged because I honestly didn't know. "Do you like movies, plays, museums?" I shrugged again. "I suppose I like all of the above, but it has been ages since I've been to any of them," I replied honestly. "Well, we'll have to change that. We can't have you hiding out in your apartment, missing out on the finer things in life." How did he know I hid out of my apartment? "This is what we're going to do. Within the next month, I'm going to take you to at least one movie, one play, and one museum. Deal?" "Deal." I tried to cover my blush by putting the menu up closer to my face. "Thank you." "There's no need to thank me. Thank you for agreeing to spend at least 3 more evenings with me." I blushed so hard, I thought my cheeks would explode. We enjoyed a delicious meal, rosemary chicken with tarragon sauce, garlic mashed potatoes, and steamed asparagus. Mason convinced me to dabble with a little wine, so we shared a bottle of Kendall Jackson Chardonnay. It was smooth-tasting, but left me a bit tipsy. Mason asked, "How about a dance?" I wasn't secure about being able to get up without falling right back down on my ass, but I said, "Sure." The band was playing a jazzy version of Jagged Edge's Goodbye. When Mason took me into his arms, I had never felt more protected or warm. I laid my head on his chest and got lost in the total experience. Then he made an extraordinary evening even more perfect by lifting my chin and fervently kissing me. When we returned to my place, we spent an entire hour making out. That was another first for me, and I was thoroughly comfortable with it until he tried to slip his fingers inside my panties, which were soaking wet. I pushed him away and said, "I'm sorry, I'm just not ready." Mason didn't get mad or cop an attitude at all. He kissed me on the forehead and said, "Thanks again for the lovely evening." I grinned, "No, thank you." He got up from the sofa and let himself out, saying, "I'll see you later," as he shut the door behind him. I remained on the sofa for a good 15 minutes, just lying there and pondering the possibilities. It was time to pay another visit to Dr. Spencer. Chapter 20 Jonquinette. It was Monday, in time for my next appointment. For some reason, it felt like I was floating on air as I made my way down the hallway to Dr. Spencer's office. Mason had changed me for the better, and I was determined to improve my situation even further. No matter what it took, I was going to find an inner peace. "Did I ever tell you how I found out about you?"
I asked Marcella after I was seated on her chaise longue.
"No, how?" she replied. "I would guess that someone referred you, but I don't often ask who. Zoe Reynard suggested that I contact you." A huge grin came across her face, like I had mentioned her best friend or something. "Ah, Zoe. She's wonderful, isn't she?" "From what I've seen, yeah, she is." "If you don't mind me asking, how do you know Zoe?" I wasn't sure I wanted to go there. Then again, I was paying to see a psychiatrist, so if I couldn't tell her everything, who could I tell? "I don't really know her. She's very active in these meetings I used to attend." "I assume you mean the sexual addiction meetings at the hospital," Marcella said. "Yes." "When you say used to, does that mean you no longer go to them?"
"I haven't been for the last few weeks."
"Any particular reason?" I took a deep breath. "For one thing, I'm not sure I'm addicted to sex. I mean, I've never had sex, to my knowledge. I was just baffled and had no idea where to turn. Then one day I saw this ad in the local community paper about various support groups at the hospital. On an impulse, I checked out their website, and sure enough, they had something for people with sexual troubles." "Well, I'm just glad that you decided to give me an opportunity. A one-on-one situation is probably healthier for you anyway." "That's an understatement," I chuckled. "I attended those meetings week after week and never said a word." Marcella apparently didn't find it comical. She just said, "Then this is definitely best for you. Anyway, I just want to let you know how I came to find you." There was a pregnant pause before I added excitedly, "I have some news." Marcella sat up taller in her chair. "Okay, I'm listening." "I have this new neighbor. His name's Mason," I said with a grin. "You're blushing." Marcella stood up and came around the desk. She sat on the edge closer to me and asked, "Does that mean there's some interest there?" I quickly admitted, "A whole lot of interest. But this is a totally new thing for me. As you know, I've never had a boyfriend or anything like that."
"Then it's about time you see what having one feels like."
"Do you really think that's wise?" I asked. "I mean, under my current circumstances, what if..." Marcella read me like a book. "You're afraid that someone else might end up dating him instead, right?" It had become painfully evident to me that I was not alone in my body. I couldn't be. And while it was frightening to think that someone else controlled my actions, it was even more frightening to allow it to continue without trying to do something to stop them. "Right," I said. "I've thought long and hard about what you said, and it's the only thing that makes sense."
"I'm glad you realize that," Marcella said.
"So what do I do, and where do I go from here?" Marcella seemed lost in deep thought for a moment. "Have you given any more thought to contacting your father?"
"Why did you bring him up?" I asked,
even though I had indeed thought a lot about it. "Sometimes people from our past can help us put together the pieces. You said your mother refuses to face the facts, but that your father always suspected something." I shook my head in dismay. I still don't understand what happened the night he got kicked out of the house. It was one of those days when I simply wasn't there. I had blacked out completely, and on Thanksgiving Day, no less.
Thanksgiving?
Yes. I closed my eyes so I could recall the bad memories. From what I've been able to piece together, a hooker showed up at the family dinner claiming that my father had been paying her for sexual favors for months. She also told everyone she was pregnant.
Oh, my.
Was it true? Marcella gasped. He denied it all, I replied. The funny thing is, I just can't imagine my father doing something like that, especially with a hooker. But why would someone just show up and say that unless it was true? That is something that will probably boggle my mind forever. My mother has never gotten over it. She thinks that by dating a bunch of other men, it will make her feel like more of a woman. Having someone trashy show up and claiming to be his side action really messed with her self-esteem. She's been trying to get it back ever since. It sounds like she might need some counseling as well. As ugly as my own situation was, even I couldn't help but laugh at that one. Mama definitely needs some help. Do you think your mother would consider attending some sessions here with you? I snickered at the mere thought. Not in this lifetime. What about your father? Marcella asked me. Quite honestly, I have no idea. My father might have finally ridden me off by now. If I were him, I would. But you're not him. Marcella reminded me. You should at least call him. I've never stopped loving him, I whispered. Then I looked Marcella in the eyes. A phone call might not do it. Maybe I'll go see him. Chapter 21. Jude. I couldn't take the shit one more second. Not one more second. I took over and screamed out, "There is no way in fucking hell Henry's coming back into the picture."
"What did you just say?"
the bitch doctor asked me. I didn't respond.
"Jean-Quinette."
I got up from the chaise and started for the door.
"Jean-Quinette?"
I turned to face her and gave her an evil grin, but still refused to reply.
"Who are you?"
she asked. "Your worst fucking nightmare, bitch," I spewed out at her. She sat back down calmly at her desk and folded her hands.
"Well, it's nice to finally meet you. Do you have a name?"
"You think you're so fucking smooth?" I had to admit that she was just that, smooth. I would have expected her to freak out or something.
"Okay, I'll play along. My name's Jude. And yours?"
I sat down across from her at the desk. Nobody out-attitudes me.
"Oh, never mind, I already know your name. Bitch."
"That's not very ladylike, calling me out of my name," she said. "Was she trying to piss me off or something?"
"Since I'm not a lady, who gives a flying fuck?" I retorted.
"So, Jude, what made you finally come out and say hello?" She reached into her top drawer and pulled out a cigarette. "Mind if I smoke?"
"Suit yourself."
She lit one up. Was it Jean-Quinette talking about reaching out to her father?
"Your father?"
"Henry Pierce is not my damn daddy," I said. So much for playing it cool. You seem to harbor a lot of negative feelings toward him.
"My, my, you are a mastermind," I stated contemptuously. "It took getting a degree to figure that out."
"Jude, I'd really like to be your friend. Would you consider that?"
"I don't need any fucking friends."
"You know, Jean-Quinette thinks she's going insane. The things you've been doing aren't very nice."
"You don't know the half of it. I'm proud of myself."
I crossed my legs, determined not to let that heifer make me lose it.
"Why is that?" she asked.
"Because I'm the shit. Joan's lucky to have me. Without me, she would have had her ass kicked her entire life. Without me, she would have let everyone run over her, especially the queen bitch, Meredith."
"Your mother?"
I sighed. "I don't know why you keep referring to that hoe and bastard as my parents. I don't have parents. The slut just didn't get it. Anyway, like I was saying before you so rudely interrupted me, Joan wouldn't have a leg to stand on without me. Don't go throwing a pity party for her ass. You should be celebrating the fact that I exist."
"But the two of you can't coexist together."
"And why the hell not? We've been coexisting all this time."
"Because that's not healthy."
So what are you saying?
I asked, getting pissed off all over again. The bitch had lost her mind, and I told her, if you think I'm going someplace, you need a psychiatrist your damn self.
She was determined to try to bond with me, the slut.
Jude, tell me about yourself.
I shrugged and said, there's nothing to tell. I put foot to ass when need be, protect Joan from people that try to fuck her over without grease, and I love to have fun from time to time.
What kind of fun? She asked.
I'll be honest, I love fucking. Fucking is the only thing worth doing in this life.
Marcella seemed bewildered.
Good. I'd finally stumped her.
Do you honestly believe that?
Yeah.
Why?
Men are such wimps. They always fold under the pressure of the pussy. I like controlling them like the little puppy dogs that they are.
That's the word I was looking for, she said.
What word?
I inquired with disdain.
Control. You want to control things.
I stood up and leaned over the desk. Don't get it twisted. I do control things. I'm always around. I just let Joan deal with the normal day-to-day bullshit so I don't have to.
If I wanted to, I could take over for good and never ever let Joan come back. That's how dominant I am.
Marcella smiled at me. You don't believe that any more than I do.
Excuse me, bitch?
If you could truly take over for good, you would have done it years ago.
You're beginning to bore me.
I didn't like the way the conversation was headed. She didn't know shit about anything, and to top it off, she wasn't shit to me, so I announced, I'm leaving.
I had made it to the door and opened it when she jumped in front of me.
No, don't leave yet.
I poked her in the shoulder. If you don't move out of my way, I will give you a beatdown you'll never forget.
Jude, we really need to continue this conversation.
I'm going to count to three, and then I'm swinging, I told her.
One. Jude, please stay, she pleaded.
I balled my right hand into a fist.
Two. When can we talk again? She asked.
Three, I said, and lifted my fist to steal her one in the face.
She must have known that I was serious because she moved to the side and said, okay, okay.
I damn near tore her arm off as I stormed past her out the office. There was no way I was going home. I headed straight to a bar to get my drink on. When I walked into a pub, it was boring as shit, and there were only a bunch of losers hanging around. I decided I needed to do something more adventurous. How dare that bitch doctor imply that I wasn't in control? Huh, she was a complete idiot. Everything I had said in her office was the truth. If I really wanted to, I could make Junquenetta disappear altogether and just be Jude. But I didn't feel like working a full-time job to pay bills, and I had no work experience of my own. None whatsoever. A light bulb went off in my head. If I could devise a way to make my own money, fuck Joan and her boring lifestyle. I left the pub, got back into the car, and headed for the seedy part of town. The part of town where there were liquor stores on every corner, pawn shops on every other block, and most importantly, a shitload of strip clubs. I spotted one that seemed to have heavy traffic, even for a Monday evening.
A lot of desperate-looking businessmen and blue-collar workers were flooding into that joint.
The name on the awning was The Bedroom. Not very creative, I thought. The shitty name didn't matter to me. I only cared about the place's potential as a moneymaker. When I got to the door, some idiot tried to tell me I had to pay a $10 cover charge to come in. I informed him that I was there to apply for a job. He looked me up and down and grinned. Even with the homely-looking outfit Joan had selected for the day, he could still tell my body was banging.
"Go on in," he said, moving aside to allow me to gain entry. "When you get in, ask for the owner. His name's Skippy."
"Skippy? What the hell kind of name is that?" I asked.
"Hey, it is what it is," the bouncer at the door replied. "As long as I get paid, I don't care what his name is." I couldn't fault him for that one, so I said, true enough.
I was pleasantly surprised when I got inside and it became clearer to me why they had such a large clientele. It was a classy place, despite its outward appearance. There was a nice leather bar spanning the entire length of the club on the left, and about 50 or so tables scattered around the dance floor in the center. All the tables had plush velvet chairs, and the waitresses wore cute little velvet outfits that left hardly anything to the imagination. I stopped one of the waitresses in her tracks.
Where can I find Skippy?
She pointed to a chubby black man seated at the end of the bar talking on a cell phone. He had on an outdated suit with a wrinkled shirt and his tie was crooked.
Shame on it all, I said aloud. You mean to tell me that crusty son of a bitch owns this place?
The waitress laughed.
Yeah, Mr. Crusty runs the show.
Where's the bathroom? I asked. She pointed to the back of the club. Down that hall on your left. I made my way to the bathroom and did some self-improvement. While I had made it past the bouncer with ease, I needed to spruce up some before I approached the owner. I unbuttoned the top three buttons of my blouse and hiked up my skirt a few inches to show more leg. I let my hair down and shook it to give it more of an untamed appearance. Interestingly enough, there was a basket on the counter with all kinds of makeup in it. I guess the girls wanted to make sure they always looked good so they could land major tips. Lucky me. I lined my eyes, darkened my eyebrows, threw on some rouge, and put on the raunchiest shade of lipstick I could find. Blood red. I puckered up, took one last glimpse at myself in the mirror, and then went back out into the club. Skippy was still in the same spot at the bar, but he was off the phone and had some hoochie mama all up in his grill. It seemed like they were having a heated discussion, but I didn't give a shit. I approached them and pushed her to the side.
Excuse me, she said nastily.
You're excused?
No problem, I replied.
I pushed up on Skippy and stood between his legs while I sat on the bar stool. I need to have a word or two with Skippy. The hoochie mama spewed, bitch, at me, and then started walking away. She pointed at Skippy and said, we'll finish this later.
My, 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 he said, eyeing me from head to toe. You sure are a feisty one.
You don't know the half of it. I nodded my head toward the bartender. Since you own this joint, how about a free drink?
Normally I don't give out free drinks, but you can have one.
He glanced at the bartender.
Sheila, give this young lady whatever she wants.
I told Sheila, hook me up with a blowjob. She laughed and said, a woman who knows her stuff.
A blowjob? Skippy inquired. That's a drink?
Yeah. You mean you own this place and nobody's ever asked you for a blowjob? I rubbed my hip against his thigh seductively. I mean, a blowjob drink, not the real kind. I'm sure there are plenty of requests of those around here. He grinned at me and almost started drooling on himself.
You've got some height on you, girl. How tall are you?
Tall enough to wrap my ankles around a man's neck and let him pummel his dick into me all night long. Skippy was about to say something when Sheila came back with my drink, which consisted of equal parts of Kahlua, Bailey's, and vodka layered into a pony glass and topped with whipped cream. Skippy practically came on himself when I put my hands behind my back, placed my mouth over the top of the glass, raised it, and took it all down the hatch in one swallow. I put the glass back down on the bar, using only my mouth, and asked, "Don't you love a woman that swallows?" Skippy cleared his throat. One of the strippers came up to him, and before she could say a word, he told her, "Beat it." She rolled her eyes and walked away. "This must be my lucky day. But I have to ask, to what do I owe this honor?"
"Skippy, I've got a straightforward proposition. I'm interested in becoming a stripper. At least, I might be interested."
"Can you dance?"
I gave him a fierce look.
"Can your dick get hard?"
"Hell yeah," he replied.
"Then there's your answer to a stupid-ass question." He raised his hands in the air.
"Hey, I had to ask. It's obvious you have certain talents," he commented, picking up the pony glass and staring at it. "But the men come here to see women shake that ass with some degree of expertise."
I looked over at the dance floor. There was some bitch performing off Back That Thing Up by Juvenile.
"You mean like her?"
Skippy glanced at the dancer.
"Yeah, just like Candy. She's one of our headliners."
I smirked.
"Well, Candy doesn't look the least bit sweet to me. And if she's truly one of your headliners, then you've been seriously missing out."
"You talk a lot of shit," he said, "but I can back it up."
"Come by tomorrow and audition."
"Fuck that. I want to dance tonight, right now."
Skippy shook his head.
"Nah, never that. All the dancers have to do a private audition first. I can't just let you get up there without knowing that you can handle your own."
"Private audition?" Is that the same thing as a trial fuck?
Skippy eyed me suspiciously.
You sure you're not the popo?
The popo?
Yeah, the police. 5-0.
The idiot was starting to rub me the wrong way.
No, I'm not the fucking police, but I fucked a couple of them once.
I couldn't help but snicker as I remembered the time I'd been pulled over for speeding in Joan's car. I couldn't allow a ticket to come to the apartment if it wasn't paid, or even risk her finding out if I paid it, so I did what I had to do and fucked both police officers in the back of their squad car to get off scot-free.
You're a trip, girl, Skippy said.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
How old are you, Skippy?
Old enough to be your damn daddy, that's for sure.
Then don't you have enough confidence in yourself to believe you'd be able to spot a police officer if one came in here undercover? I asked.
Of course.
Then why are we wasting valuable time with asinine questions? Skippy chuckled.
You got me making all kinds of exceptions up in this bitch tonight. First the free drink, and now you actually got me thinking about letting you get up on the stage without an audition.
I live by rules. They are my rules, but they are rules just the same. I ran my fingertips over his chest.
Skippy, what's the point of having rules if you never venture to break them?
What's your name, sugar?
I hadn't thought about a name until that point. I needed something that would land a bunch of bucks. Just call me Mercy, because that's what men will have to beg for when I start slaying their dicks with my pussy.
Skippy almost fell off the bar stool when he broke out in laughter.
Okay, Mercy. You have something to wear for your big performance?
No. Just tell the audience the truth, that I wandered in off the street and asked for a public audition. Like I said, I'm not sure I want to be a stripper. I just want to try it out for one night and see if I'm feeling the profession and if the profession is feeling me.
Name your song, girl,
Skippy said anxiously. 10 minutes later, I was taking the stage to Madonna's Secret, and the crowd was rowdy from the first second. Skippy had personally announced me, and they were all excited about a freak coming in on a whim to shed it all. I closed my eyes and got into the tempo as it started out slowly and then picked up the pace. The song was just fast enough and just seductive enough to dance erotically to, and before I knew it, men were pitching dollar bills on the stage. I swirled my hips and started undoing the rest of my blouse until it was completely undone. I turned my back to the audience and inched it off my shoulders until it was covering my hips. Then I swung back around and let it fall to the floor. I palmed my breast and rubbed on my nipples through my bra. They immediately stood at attention. I reached behind me and unzipped the skirt. Once again, I turned my back to them and started working my hips out of the skirt as the DJ switched to my next request, Always on Time by Ja Rule. I really got into it then, and so did they. They started chanting, Mercy, Mercy, Mercy! I worked my way over to a young brother sitting at a table right in front of the stage. I got down on my knees and moved them back and forth together, licked my index finger, and rubbed it over the crotch of my panties. I placed my fingertip on his lips, and he licked it. Then he handed me a $5 bill. I spent the rest of the song making my rounds and collecting money. I even swung around the pole a time or two, but didn't try to jump on the top and slide down. I wasn't geared up for that one, and didn't want to make a fool out of myself if I fell. I danced to two other songs after that one ended, Super Freak by Rick James and Mr. Big Stuff by Gene Knight. Once the next stripper, who went by the name of Pisces, took the stage, I spent about an hour doing lap dances and, yes, collecting more money. I was convinced that if I really wanted to, I could make a good living shaking my ass in men's faces. I got dressed, thanked Skippy for the experience, and told him that I may or may not be back. He seemed disappointed and claimed he would make me his star if I decided to work for him. When I got outside, I noticed that two men were following me. They had been seated at the bar inside the club. Is this what strippers have to put up with? I thought. Motherfuckers trailing them outside the damn club?
Hey, Mercy! One of them called out.
I swung around to face them. What the hell do you all want? Why are you following me? The other one, obviously as drunk as his friend, said,
We want you to make us beg for mercy.
At first I rolled my eyes and then checked them out more closely. They weren't half bad looking, and it had been a while since I fucked two men at once,
Still, I wasn't interested, so I told them, I'm not interested, but I'm sure one of the other girls would be if the situation is right. I was implying that they could get whatever they wanted if the money was on point, and they knew it.
Well, what would we have to do to make this situation right for you?
The first one asked.
Not a damn thing. I'm just not feeling it tonight.
They started whispering to each other. I walked on toward the car.
Listen, one of them called out.
It turned out to be the taller of the two.
Duke and I have always had this competitive spirit. He and I both claim we're the best pussy connoisseur on the planet, but the bullshit talk is getting old.
I raised an eyebrow. And?
And how about you let us settle the dispute once and for all?
I laughed. So you two want to eat me out and let me decide who's better at it? The shorter one nodded.
Exactly.
Now I was tired and drained, but I had never been one to turn down a good pussy eating, and if they were planning a battle, then they would both be trying to outdo even themselves. I stood there trying to come up with the right price. If I didn't charge them, it would have seemed bizarre. Besides, they were undoubtedly planning to pay, and money is money. Finally, I said, $100 each.
To eat you?
The taller one asked. Look, I don't have all night. Either you want to eat this pussy or you don't. It makes no difference to me. The taller one glanced at his friend.
Maybe we should go back inside and find someone else.
The shorter one objected.
No, I want this one right here. $100 is too steep for you. I got you.
It's all good because I know that I'm going to win the competition and it's worth every penny to get you to stop bragging on that tongue and shut the hell up. He dug into his pocket, pulled out a wad of cash and paid me. I winked at him and said, it's on. As I lay on a bed in a pay-by-the-hour motel with my legs spread open being eaten out, I couldn't help but giggle. That damn bitch doctor didn't know what she was talking about. I was in complete control, to the point that I had taken Joan's degradation to another level by accepting cash for a sexual favor. The shorter one found himself ass out. Not only did he give up the 200, he also gave up bragging rights because the taller one was definitely the best pussy connoisseur on the planet.
Chapter 22. Junquenette. Never had I wished that I had started my own accounting firm more than when I went into work that Thursday and asked for Friday off. You would have thought the world had come to an end by the expression on Mr. Wilson's face.
Junquenette, we really need you here tomorrow, he whined. We're backed up on a lot of things.
I thought we were all caught up. I only have one thing in my box, and that will take me less than 10 minutes to straighten out. Fridays are slow, but anything that comes in, I can surely knock out on Monday morning.
Are you ill? Mr. Wilson asked me.
No, I actually need to go see my father in North Carolina.
I wasn't aware that your father was still alive.
He said that as if I regularly discussed my private life with him. For all he knew, my mother wasn't among the living, and she lived right in Atlanta.
Yes, he is alive, I said.
Well, is he ill?
Yeah, he is, I lied, sensing that Daddy would have to be practically on his deathbed in order for my day off to be a crisis.
What's wrong with him?
Mr. Wilson pried. I didn't want to wish anything too bad on Daddy, so I said, he runs an auto repair shop and there was a mishap.
What sort of mishap?
One of the cars fell off the lift. Luckily it fell to the side, but it did bang against his leg and it's broken. What I said couldn't have sounded more outlandish, and I realized it after I said it. Amazingly, Mr. Wilson believed me. He winced and said,
"Ooh, that sounds painful. You should go check on him in that case."
Thank you. He started walking out of my office but paused.
Now, you will be back here on Monday, right?
With bells on, I replied. When he left, I added, more like with shackles on my feet. Darnetta came in as I was talking to myself.
Did you say something?
Oh, no, just thinking aloud. Darnetta sat down without an invitation.
So what's up, girlfriend? We haven't had a chance to talk much since the wedding. What happened to you that night anyway? Logan said you got sick, but you seemed fine when I picked you up, and all throughout the wedding.
I deliberated over an answer but knew I couldn't take too long to fabricate one because Darnetta would figure me out. I must have eaten something that didn't agree with me. Either that or I ate entirely too much. My stomach was upset. Plus, I had cramps.
Please don't mention cramps. I'm on my period now, and mine are killing me.
Have you been drinking hot tea? I asked her, legitimately concerned for her well-being.
No, tea and I don't agree with each other. It always makes me feel bloated, and I feel bad enough already.
What about some of that over-the-counter medication for cramps? I asked.
I've tried every brand they make, and nothing seems to help.
All I can say is the person that invents something to stop menstrual cramps is going to be one wealthy man.
It won't be a man who invents it, Darnetta said. That's the quandary now. I bet you all the ones in the market were invented by people who have never felt a single menstrual cramp in their lives.
We both laughed. Probably true, I agreed. Well, the good part is that we only have to suffer the madness for a few days a month.
Yeah, but 3 days on a period can feel like 3 years sometimes.
Darnetta got up and went for the door.
I'ma call you soon so we can hook up again.
Okay, I said, knowing good and well that I wouldn't be hanging out with her ever again. I wasn't even clear about what happened the first time that I did. It took me 4 hours to drive from Atlanta to the outskirts of Charlotte. He lives in a small town called Trinity. Once there, I drove around for more than an hour searching for my father's house. Everyone in the small town knew each other, so I stopped an older African-American couple and asked them. They said Daddy fixed their cars for them and was a great man. Then they gave me directions. One or both of them must have been senile because it took me a while to figure out that they had told me to turn left on High Bridge Road when I should have turned right. It was dusk when I finally arrived. I was shaken to see the condition of the place. From the outside, it looked like it was about to give way. While Daddy had never been one to define himself by his surroundings, this was definitely not what I expected. I rang the doorbell and was stunned when a little girl answered the door.
"Can I help you?"
she asked in the sweetest voice. I glanced up at the house number on the porch to make sure I had the right place. Does Henry Pierce live here?
Daddy!
The girl yelled out as she disappeared around a corner. Daddy? A moment later, my father appeared and had to take 2 steps back when he saw me. Jonquinette? You say that like it's a question. Has it been so long that you don't even recognize me? I asked. Of course I recognize you. He embraced me, then pulled me inside. Come on in, please. The little girl stood there swaying her hips. She was adorable, with fudge-colored skin and big brown eyes. She had shoulder-length hair and 2 pigtails tied with violet ribbons to match her short set. Jonquinette, this is Flower. Flower, this is your big sister, Jonquinette, Daddy said, making a formal introduction. I got the impression that Flower never knew of my existence. I couldn't blame Daddy for not telling her. Since I had not responded to any of his letters, he had to assume that she would never meet me. She would have been confused to know that she had an older sister who was never around. It's very nice to meet you, Flower, I said, extending my hand, which she graciously accepted and gently shook. Daddy sighed and looked at me. I'll explain everything. I told him, you don't owe me an explanation. We all migrated into his living room, which was very basic but neat. At least he hadn't become a slob over the years. He had a tattered couch and love seat set that had seen much better days, a scratched-up coffee table, and a new 19-inch television sitting on top of the original box by a window. It was hot, and his air conditioning unit in the window wasn't working too efficiently. I immediately started sweating. Flower is a very pretty name, I told the little half-sister that I never knew existed. She blushed like it was the biggest compliment she had ever had.
Thank you. My mother picked it out.
Well, she did an excellent job. I surveyed the house. The dining room table was bare, and there were no pictures on any of the walls from what I could see. Definitely no visible signs of a woman's touch. I wanted to know if Daddy was remarried without coming out and directly inquiring about it. So I asked, "Is your mother here?" Oh, no. Flower shook her head and hipped simultaneously.
She doesn't live here, but she comes to pick me up on Sunday night.
Daddy cleared his throat. Flower, why don't you go get washed up for dinner?
Okay, Daddy.
Flower pranced off, and I could hear her little footsteps running up the stairs.
No running in the house, Daddy yelled after her.
I laughed. Some things never change. You used to yell that same thing at me. He grinned.
That's because you wouldn't listen and ran throughout the house every single day.
I picked up a department store sales paper from the coffee table and started fanning myself. She's adorable. How old is she?
6.
He went over to the air conditioner and banged on it. Sorry it's so hot in here. I'm trying to save up to get central air, but it's not easy. Even with regular clients, still isn't easy making a good living in this back-ass town.
Well, Daddy, no one told you to give up on being a computer programmer.
He and I both sat down on the sofa.
No, he said. They just told me to give up my whole damn family, which was the same thing as giving up my life.
I could tell that he was still bitter about the divorce and wanted to say something like, you made your own bed, so lie in it. But I didn't. It wasn't my objective to visit him and incite drama after so many years. I guess you neglected to mention her in your letters, I said, getting back to Flower. He sighed.
I don't know how to word it.
I figured if I told you I had another daughter, I'd never get a response. I disagreed. Actually, it probably would have been the exact opposite. If I'd known I had a little sister, I would have wanted to meet her.
You want something to drink? I have some orange juice and milk.
No, I'm fine for now.
I already knew you had orange juice and milk because those are the only two things a person needs daily to survive, we said in unison.
Daddy used to wear that saying out when I was a child. If my mother didn't have anything else in the house, she knew it. She better have milk and orange juice or Daddy would have a fit. We sat in silence for a minute, feeling each other out with our eyes. To make a time-consuming story short, her mother, Allison, and I are just good friends, he said, evidently referring to Flower's mother. We took pleasure in each other's company for a while, and Flower was the result. We haven't fooled around in years. We just share custody and try to make sure she has a normal life. Unlike my life, which was never normal, I blurted out. He put his hands on his knees, like he was bracing himself for something physically painful. I don't know what to say. I stroked him on the hand so he would ease up some. No need to say anything. We'll chat about it later. I'm planning to stay for a couple of days, if that's okay. He smiled like he had won the lottery. Young Gwinnett, you have no idea how okay that is. You've made my day, my year, my decade by showing up here. I was hoping he would still feel that way by the time it was all over, said and done. So, what's for dinner? Chapter 23 Junk Gwinnett. Daddy wasn't much of a cook. Again, some things never change. He made his best attempt at making spaghetti, and it needed major sprucing up. He had no spices in the house at all except salt and pepper, so we made do with that. Flower was the exact opposite of me as a child. She was conversational. Throughout dinner, she told me all about attending first grade at George Washington Carver Elementary School. She explained how he had helped out farmers by inventing more than 300 uses for peanuts. Without having to tell me, I knew that the school had to be in the black section of town. There was no way white people in North Carolina would allow their kids to attend a school named after an African American, not the part of North Carolina we were in. I found out that her mother, Allison, was a veterinarian, and according to Flower, the savior of all God's creatures. I couldn't remember the last time I had held any form of conversation with a child, but I truly enjoyed it. Children are so innocent and full of life. They have no expectations, no misgivings, and thus no frustrations. Daddy was pretty quiet throughout dinner, more than likely still astonished that I had even showed up. It's like one of those things you always dream about, but become content that it would never happen. His letters over the years have pleaded with me to reach out to him, but I refused. I'm glad he never showed up on my doorstep, because it would not have turned out the same way. Everything works on God's timetable, not our own. As I thought that, I realized it had been too long since I had attended church, and there was no excuse for that. I would have to get back to my normal schedule and begin tithing again. I asked Daddy, "Do you attend church?" He looked up from his plate, "Every Sunday, like clockwork. You?" "I try to, but I will admit that lately I have slacked off a bit." "Well, how about we all go together this Sunday?" he asked. Flower squirmed anxiously in her seat.
"That would be great, Daddy. Then all my friends from Sunday school can meet my big sister."
Big sister. Two little words that spoke volumes and meant big responsibility. Even though I had just met Flower and had absolutely no idea how her mother would react when she met me, or if her mother even knew about me, I made a promise to myself to play a significant role in her life. I would have given anything to have a sibling, older or younger than me, to talk to when I was a child. Parents just can't understand everything.